This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Food, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Amir Sayadabdi, the host of the channel. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Demet Guzey about her book, Mustard, A Global History, which was published in 2019 by Reaction Books. Demet is a food and wine writer, researcher, and lecturer based in Verona, Italy. She's also the author of Food on Food, A History of Eating on Trails and in the Wild. Demet, thanks for accepting my invitation and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Amir. It's great to be here.
To start off, Demet, could you tell us a bit about your background and how you ended up as a food writer and researcher?
Well, I've been always in foods, but starting as a food scientist. I'm not going to start from, you know, how I learned cooking next to my grandma. It's not that kind of a story. But I have studied food science, first food engineering. And I even have, my PhD in this field. And my interest in the culture of food and cooking and this may be more sociological or anthropological side came up later in life, I have to admit. So I was more in the technology and in the science of it. And after a half a year in Dijon in France, where I was for a project about mustards, which I'll tell you about later, I started to pick up more and more the cultural sides of food and wanted to know more about it. And shortly after, I did this study in gastronomy at the Cordon Bleu in Paris. And I started writing my first book, which you also mentioned. And slowly I moved into gastronomy, into writing and studying about food and culture.
And your book, Demet, is published as part of Reaction Books' Edible series. And for those listeners who don't know about Edible series, it's a series that focuses on the global history and culture of one type of food or beverage in each of its book. And your book, Demet, is on mustard. So why mustard?
Good question. I think a lot of people ask me that. And of course, the answer could be, why not? My first book was called Food on Foot, as you also said. And that was my own exploration of food and writing. And I've written about different geographies, different historical periods, and how people ate, what they brought with them when they were on foot and going into expeditions and explorations of the world. It allowed me to look at the world with the lens of this this activity of eating. And for a second book, I really wanted to write for the reaction series because it had a different focus. It was very much, I think, looking for the same things, stories of people moving with food or exchanging food, but at a very specific, a very narrow angle. And I wanted to write for them very badly. So I have written to the series editor, Andrew Smith, and made some proposals. Some of them were like things like yogurt or grappa, and mustard was among the ideas because, you know, they have many of the books already published. And I know they're still looking for authors. If anybody out there wants to write one of these books, you should try. And mustard was one that stuck because it was a globally relevant. It was specific. It was culturally very rich. So there were so many stories about it that they wanted to go ahead with mustard.
I bet. And could you give us a kind of a light version of the historical background of mustard as you discuss in your book? I mean, where does it come from and how did its history evolve until today?
There is no lineage of mustard. We cannot say like, oh, it started here and then it went around the world because it starts at different places. In this sense, it's nice because it has stories of belonging, but stories of immigration and cultural exchange. So we can find in a very short, very simplified version, black seeds in China, brown seeds in India, and yellow, or sometimes it's called white, mustard seeds in Mediterranean. So this is how they start. But then maybe there were some black seeds also brought by the Romans to Europe before we have any records of it. So those are things that we may not know exactly. But then it's the story of the yellow mustard seeds that takes us to different continents, because it's the Romans take it to first Gaul, today's France, then they take it to Germany, they take it to England. So all these this famous mustards that we eat today are based on this historical path. And from Spain, then the seeds go to America, to California, and they're planted there. And we have the American mustard. So it is it starts in different geographies and different styles or different as a different plant, let's say. But this is the path, mostly the Roman path and the path of discovery of America.
And how many mustards, I mean, this is a very kind of general question, how many mustards do we have? Because in chapter 2 of your book, you discuss different types of mustard and the history associated with each of these. You discuss, for example, French mustard, English mustard, German mustard, Italian mustard, and also mustard in the East. What are some of the main elements that differentiate these from each other? You mentioned their history or their geography. Is it also the land, or is it, is their taste different, or is it like a combination of all these factors?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, your question is it's right on. I think it's a combination of all those things. And I have tried to limit these options because otherwise it would be an encyclopedic work. And I'd focused on the biggest mustard types that we all know, consume and love. There are hundreds of types. And if you go to the Mustard Museum in Wisconsin, and you can virtually go there as we cannot easily travel these days.
Yes.
Barry Levinson is the person behind this building, this idea, this fantastic museum, and you can see hundreds of examples from around the world. I've also sent him some mustards from Turkey because I'm from Istanbul, Turkey. So I've even extended his collection just a slightly bit. the way they are different from each other, as I said before, first depends on the type of seed, right? So they could start from brown or black, and that has a very defining character in color, in pungency, in taste. Maybe in taste less so, but you know, when we talk about mustard, we think of pungency. That's the biggest effect that it brings to the sauce. So that's one thing. And the second thing is how cultures brought this made what they made of this natural thing and how they have made it either sweet or more more bitter or more you know, flavorful by adding other spices, and there are many recipes that confirm this approach that was very different from different cultures, different countries.
And before I move on to my next question, I want to kind of ask a follow-up question on that. Have you been yourself to Mustard Museum, or have you been there just virtually?
Yes, I've been there virtually. We had also a call with Barry on when I was writing my book, because for me, it was like a library. It was an institution I had to understand and learn from. And they have also a lot of memorabilia, you know, the mustard cans or jars and brochures, advertisement, a lot of information there. Yeah, I've not been. It would be interesting to go, in fact.
Yes, it sounds fascinating. And with any food or any food item, Demet, comes a system of sort of symbolic meanings. And these symbolic meanings are, you know, communicated and, in fact, lived in a range of different ways. Our everyday language, for example, is rich in symbols of food and you know, eating, and we see quite a lot of use of, you know, food symbolism in literature also, and elsewhere. Is that the case about mustard too?
Yeah, definitely, and that's why I think it's such a rich ingredient to talk about and to write about. And in a lot of languages, well, mostly in English, as also I wrote the book in English, but also in German, in Dutch, in French, there are references to mustard. Mustard is a symbol of, you know, we can imagine it's pungent, it's something that burns our nose. So it is tough, it is persistent, it's a symbol of strength, of also small beginnings, things that explode, you know, that start small but very strong, and these things kind of go into the language. But it's also, surprisingly, it's in literature, and in Shakespeare's plays, there is reference to mustard. It's plenty. And I think we would do justice reading this whole pieces of work to understand how they fit in the time that they were created. But I gave little anecdotes from some literature and also the Bible in the book, because it's mentioned in biblical text how mustard is a symbol of faith or symbol of religion, symbol of belief. And in Quran, we see similar references, because I think the size is the biggest size versus effect, the impact. Like, it's so small and looks so harmless, but once it's crushed and the flavors are released, the pungency is released, it's so strong. That is very metaphorical. That was picked up by religious or secular literature.
And that was one of my favorite part of your book, Demet, when you discuss all this. It's really fascinating. Mustard has been in existing for centuries, and you discuss this in length in your book. Like any other food with that kind of history, I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that there is some, you know, mythical or medicinal use for, you know, any kind of food with that kind of history, mustard included, especially in ancient and Middle Ages in different parts of the world. Am I correct, or am I way off?
Yes, you're very correct that when we go so far back, we see food starting off as a medicine before. And as people believed, you know, you are what you eat, and you heal yourself with what you eat that becomes part of you. That was a very straightforward correlation, that they could try to heal themselves with something like mustard, because it warms you up, it warms your blood, it gives you this warming effect. In fact, maybe I need to mention briefly how in the Greek times, Hippocrates developed these dietetic rules that later on was developed by Galen, and it was also incorporated by Ibn Sina in the East into their studies, that said, you know, foods can increase or decrease your humors. So they can give you a better health, or they could also put you off balance. And mustard is mentioned by all these texts in different parts of the world as something that was warm and dry, and therefore it could compensate cold and humid things. So that's very interesting, because then when you had a cold or you had bronchitis, you could do mustard plasters. And we still have mustard plasters, by the way, in France, you can buy them. But you could also crush them with some other seeds and eat them. So the line between food and medicine in the Middle Ages is not very clear. So what you could eat, you could also put on your body, and it could be the same effect. And later on, when after Renaissance, more or less, medicine, you know, the scientific medicine starts denying these effects, and we lose touch with any possible health benefits of scrubbing with mustard or putting mustard on ourselves. So it's not very much practice, but you can still find the mustard plasters. I've bought some and tried. It is a warming ingredient, so that's why it was believed to have some sort of an effect. But sometimes in these medical texts, or well, ancient medical texts, I have to say, you see that it's not so straightforward. For example, they recommend it for melancholy or to help some other the illnesses that are not correct directly related to the warming effect of mustard. So maybe they just wanted to try everything for different sicknesses or situations, conditions.
Yes, I remember my grandmother actually had mustard in her medicine cabinet.
Yeah.
I don't exactly remember what she was using it for, but I remember she had it. So it's still in use in Iran today for, you know, medicinal purposes. Okay. I don't know about the rest of the world. And at the end of the book, you also include some recipes with mustard, Demet. Where do these recipes come from? I mean, why did you choose those recipes in particular? Is there a story behind them, or is that, I mean, what's the story there?
I mean, traditionally, these series, under this edible series, there are recipes in each book. And I wanted them to be historically relevant. And because this is not a cookbook, as you imagine, it's not necessarily that people say, I want to cook something with mustard, let me pick up this book, because it's mostly about history, about the culture of mustard.
Yes.
But you can cook from my recipes. I've tried some of them. So what I wanted to do was to show the range. Because it's a testimony to the range, to the diversity, to the wealth, you know, cultural wealth of mustard. So I have included the oldest recipes possible to the newest, and I've put some things you can cook, but some things you cannot cook because it's so cryptic, the way they're written. Some Eastern texts is like that, like from Cairo or from Byzantine, because there are no quantities, it's not clear. Some of the spices you cannot find, but it teaches us something about the period, the place of that time. And some other recipes are maybe using mustard as an ingredient to turn it into a dish, like with chicken or making a soup, mustard soup. That's an easy one. So if you're a beginner in mustard cuisine, you can start with a mustard soup, for example, from my book. And I also wanted to show the diversity of mustard, not only as a seed, but as a leaf, as an oil. And you can use it in not only as a sauce. So I've included basically recipes from Roman times, medieval times, Renaissance, German recipes from all around the world. So that ended up being a nice section, in fact, and not just an afterthought like an appendix, but it supports all the rest of the book, that in language, in the kitchen, in medicine, in the collective culture of a country, you see how they looked at mustard, because then they have recipes, they have medicine, they have maybe paintings about this topic. So it kind of supports a cultural network, and you find examples or traces in different areas. It was another good excuse to look at mustard from the real practical culinary angle.
It is indeed a fantastic collection of recipes, Demet. There's obviously a lot more in the book, and I encourage listeners to pick up a copy. But before we wrap up the interview, I'd like to ask whether you're working on something right now, or are you thinking about doing a project or a research on a particular topic, perhaps on another food item for the edible series in the near future?
So nothing for the edible series, although I think it's a very nice project. It allows you to focus on one little ingredient, but with that very specific thing, you open the whole world and you look at geography, history, science. And I think those dimensions make the past come alive, and you can really learn about the world in a very new way. So I really enjoyed this project. But this book did to me, I think it allowed me to see the significance of that period in France that I had, that kind of caused my career to change. And I have not started writing a book right after, but I have developed a course for the Cordon Bleu Culinary School online about food and art. Because while researching for this book, I've also looked at artworks, paintings, but not only. And I've seen that it was also another angle, like we're talking about recipes or medicine or science. Art was another dimension in which we could see traces of food, in which we could see what people thought about food and about themselves, about the life through food. And so it led to a different chapter in my career. So maybe a book about food and art could be in my future.
Yes, please do that. That's really exciting. And I can't wait to, you know, read it if and when it comes out, Demet. Do you have any further comments? Anything you want to add about the book or about anything in general?
No, I think everyone should read this book. It's a fun little book. I think it's a testimony to diversity of food culture, because smaller than this, I don't think you can go. I'm not sure. I've not checked, but I can bet that this is the smallest ingredient in the series, because you can write about anything, right? And have the same view, and you know yourself. And this makes us passionate about food, because it's never just about food. And that's what I love about mustard, because it's never just about the little seed, but what it symbolizes and what it means to people, what it allowed them to do and achieve. So go ahead and read it. But if it's not this book, then read another one in this series. I think they're very much life enhancing, enriching little condiments to our life.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Demet, for coming on the show and speaking with me today and sharing your insight and your work with our listeners. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Amir. Thank you so much for having me.